planning is about how to tame the Hilbert space of strings when we take into account that their number is not conserved. So in nature, when we have a state in the Hilbert space, number of particles is not a conserved thing. So we say that I have an electron plus the electron with a bunch of photons around, plus the electron with a bunch of protons and antiprotons around. So the state, an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian of the universe, is not an eigenstate of a fixed number of particles. Okay? So similarly, in string theory, when we have, say, a string, there's no such thing as saying that I have a cat with a single string and that's it. I just evolve it in time and the string continues evolving. That's not how it works. In general, a state describing some string would be something like this, plus some small coefficient, let's call it a coupling of a string, times a state with two strings, perhaps one of them smaller than the other, plus some other correction times states of multiple strings, plus dot, dot, dot. Okay? Exactly in the same way that when we have us, we are us plus a thermal bath. One photon, two photons, three photons, four photons. It's not like we say, I have this number of particles and that's it. Okay? And now there is a notion in which if this string, if the probability of the string splitting is very small, normally we ignore all this. So typically, so this stuff here is normally ignored. And once we ignore this, what do? We take strings and we consider, say, scattering processes where, for example, we send two strings from minus infinity and we receive two strings at plus infinity. And we ask, what's the S matrix? What's the probability amplitude for these two strings to go into these two strings? Okay? Is it okay? Now, what we are saying though is that this state of a single string is not a correct asymptotic state. If I evolve this state infinitely in time, this state is actually the first state of a sum. So we would like to understand how to improve this and consider really honest evolution between asymptotic states that are multiparticle string states. Okay? Okay. So that's the goal here. Okay? So now let me tell you a little bit about how string theory appears very naturally when you consider series with a large number of colors. Okay, so have you seen this large n expansion of Feynman graphs? So have you seen strings appearing from large n expansion? We did not discuss it. So let's consider, say, a correlation function in a theory. So let's consider a theory where I have a scalar, phi, but phi is a matrix, AB, so these indices run from 1 to n. So my operators are matrices. Okay? They could depend on the space-time position, x. X could be a point in space-time. Okay? And then, suppose I consider the correlation function of operators, let's call them O, P at position x1, OP at position xn, where this OP, the index P of x, would stand for trace of this matrix phi at position x to raised to the power P. So graphically, how would we draw this? This scalar, we would say it's an object that has two indices, an index A and an index B. That's just a picture for this object. But then with this picture, you see what happens when I multiply several of these objects. When I multiply several of these objects, I construct something like this, where I start connecting them together. And because I take a trace, at the end I identify this and this. Okay? So now it's a string. See? A string appears. Shada! So let's try to be more precise. Let's try to see what happens with this diagram. So this is the representation of this object. Okay? So as I said, a string appeared. But let's see that it's more than this. Let's suppose we consider, say, a two-point function. So let's do the case of n equals to 2. Okay? So I have two such diagrams. So I have my one operator. As we said, it's a string like this, where this line represents, again, indices. So each tick that comes out represents one phi. So this case would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It would be p equals 7. So this is an example, p equals 7. And let's draw another one here in the bottom, where we draw again 7, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay? And now suppose your theory, so if it's free, if the theory is just quadratic, d phi, all you have is propagator between phi and phi. Right? Feynman rules, you know. So I just connect these lines from bottom to top. Phi. Do you agree? So what I would start saying is, let's draw in yellow, propagator, say, between this line and this line. Now, the theory could also have, in the Lagrangian, so the Lagrangian of my theory could be the free Lagrangian, the one that gives rise to these propagators, plus, for example, trace of phi to the 4, which would be an interaction. This interaction means that here I have, say, a quartic vertex like this, where you see that I have phi times phi times phi times phi, but it's a trace, so at the end the indices are identified like this. And then this vertex could be connected by propagators to this guy. Or I could have, let's draw something a bit more complicated here, where I use a vertex. But after using a vertex, let me use it again. Let's use it one more time, why not? Right. This would be an example where we would use vertices three times. Okay? And where each of these double line notation would represent a propagator. Okay? Now notice that this diagram here, I can think it looks, this is a diagram that is something that I draw on a cylinder. Okay? I mean, I'm basically going to repeat the same picture if I were to draw it here on the cylinder. So this is the top of the cylinder, this is the bottom of the cylinder, and all lines are drawn here. So there is some lines like this, some line like this, the one that crosses, and then one that goes like this and crosses with the other ones. So it is a bunch of lines drawn on the surface of a cylinder. Okay, so I draw them on the surface of a cylinder. And now let's see how this diagram would scale from the point of view of n. So what's the dependence on the number of colors of this diagram? So each time we have a closed loop, for example here, a closed loop, this phase gives me a power of n, right? Because I sum over this index, so I get n. So we just need to count how many loops we have. So we have n here, n here, n here, n here, n, and outside n. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, n to the 12. So this diagram scales like n to the 12. Okay?
Why is there an outside
index? Because this index outside, this index here, is as good as the indices inside. I also sum over this index, right? this index that goes here and comes back here. Right? Even what's outside and inside in the cylinder, you wouldn't even tell. I could use the cyclic property and rotate some of the points here, rotate some of the points here. So there's nothing special with outside. Outside is this region. Right? So here you just count how many faces in the cylinder there are. Okay. Now, we can easily see that something would happen if I were to draw these lines, say, let me draw something else. Okay, so, yeah. Now I'm going to make the following claim. I'm going to, how do I do it? Let me do it. I don't want to draw everything again, but I'm going to say, reconnect these lines and say that, what's the simplest one I can do? Suppose I swap these two. So I take this, and let's suppose we swap them. Okay? So now you see that when you swap, what happens is that these lines cross. Now, this propagator has to go below this one, and this one has to go above. So now I can no longer draw the diagram in the plane, right? Let's just draw this part up here. This part up here would be, there will be a line, another one goes there, and another one here goes here. Okay? So this would be how the lines up there would be rearranged if I swap those two endpoints. So the point is that this diagram here, I can draw on the cylinder without lifting, just drawing lines like this, without lifting. This one I cannot. Okay? This one I cannot draw on the cylinder. This one I can draw on a genus one surface. On a surface that would be a cylinder with a hole. Okay? Then I could indeed draw propagators here and use the topology of this cylinder to draw crazy stuff that could. So I can draw diagrams on the torus, because it has a hole there that I could not draw on the cylinder. Okay? And the claim is that the Feynman diagrams, when you have a theory where fields are matrices and the number of colors are large, the claim is that if I compute a correlation function, say of two operators, OP, OP, this would be equal to diagrams that you can draw on the cylinder, plus diagrams that you can draw on a torus, plus diagrams that you can draw on a torus with two handles, plus dot, dot, dot. So you can isolate your graphs by looking at them and saying, this one I can draw on the plane. This one I need a donut. If I have a donut, I can draw on the donut without the lines crossing. Then another one, I need a donut with two holes, then a donut with three holes, and you start doing topologies of higher and higher genus. And what's relevant, what's interesting, is that if you normalize this guy to 1, so in this case it would amount to dividing by n to the 12 to make sure it is well normalized, the higher the genus, the less important they are. So if you normalize this guy to 1, this one comes with 1 over n squared, and this one comes with 1 over n to the 4, and so on. So the intuition is that this diagram is looking exactly like what we expect from an expansion in string theory. So not only this object looks like a string, okay, but we can think that the summation of all the diagrams you draw here are like discretizing the string surface. Summing of all diagrams that you draw here are like summing over all string surfaces. Summing over all diagrams that you draw here would be like summing over all surfaces where the string splits. So you would say that maybe I can think of this guy as saying these are the path integrals over all string surfaces that are maps from two dimensions, because the string is a two-dimensional object. There is the space and time of the string into some target space, e to the minus the action of the string, where I sum over surfaces of genus 0. And this, and the integration, this path integral, are the sum over the diagrams. So summing over all diagrams would be like summing over all triangulations of this surface, would be the moral equivalent of integrate doing the path integral over strings. Okay? Summing over all graphs that you can draw, but you need a torus, summing over all such diagrams, would be the analog of doing the path integral over strings, but now over surfaces of genus 1. So the string goes, and when propagating from one point to the other, splits in two in the middle. And so on and so forth. Okay? And then, when in this interpretation, these terms would come multiplied by g string square, because there is a probability for it to split and a probability for it to join. And each genus would be multiplied by g string to the power 4, 6, and so on. So you would identify and say that if there is such string theory, I should identify the coupling with 1 over the number of colors. Okay? And if you want, this is the basic idea that Tuft had in, I don't know, a long time ago. And ADS-CFT is a realization of these ideas. There is such a theory, which is a theory where operators are matrices with a big number of indices, with indices that take big values. And there is indeed such description in terms of a string theory. And the fact that the two give the same is the statement of ADS-CFT, the statement of holography, and of the fact that you have the same description in two different ways. Because this was unwavering. I just said, oh, based on diagram, this looks like a string. Probably there is such string theory. But it's not constructive. I did not show how to write a string theory, what's the Lagrangian for this string theory, what are the rules. I just said, oh, this looks like a string. And then we said more. We said, it's more than that. There is such notion of topology, and we sum over topology. So that's good. Okay. So the basic idea of what I said is that theories with large n, with large number of colors, are string theories. In disguise. To make this precise is tough, but that would be the general statement. You have a gauge theory with large number of colors, it should be a string theory. Okay, so QCD, real world, you have 3 colors. If you replace 3 by 1 million, it should be a string theory. Okay. So these diagrams you had seen, I hope, right? You had seen this kind of diagram, you just did not give it a large N interpretation. So you probably saw simpler diagrams, like vacuum diagram, right? For the vacuum, you would probably write something. Imagine a vacuum with 2 cubic vertices. Maybe you studied this diagram. Is it true? If you did large N, you probably did at least this diagram. No? No? Okay. If you did this diagram, you see, for example, this is N, N, and then outside. And this you can draw on a sphere. But if you were to draw a diagram which... actually, is this a good example? Let me do. Let me draw, for example, this diagram here. No, okay, no, that one was okay, actually. N versus the one where you would connect them like this. Like this. And like this.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay? So compare these two diagrams. So both connect a cubic vertex with a cubic vertex. But this one has N, N, N. And this one, let's count how many faces we have. We start flowing here, we go here, we just follow the color line, and we go around, and we see that we go around once only. So this has only 1 power of n, so this is n. So you see the ratio, as I said, so this guy, this is n cubed, and this is n. So there, if I normalize this to 1, right? So then this is 1, and this is 1 over n squared. Okay, so this is on a sphere, this I need to draw on a torus. Okay, so this guy I draw on the sphere, I just put a sphere and I draw this diagram here. Okay. This one I need to draw on a torus, I have a torus. and I will draw something where I have this and then this. Is it like this? No, it's not like this. It's like this. And then I would use So I have two cubic vertices and I need to draw it on a torus. Okay, let me think a little bit. I'll draw it later, but it should be easy. So I have my torus. And let's put an operator. Yeah, why am I drawing closed lines? So I have here. And I have a cubic vertex. This will be the two operators. Cubic, and then this. Yeah. Yeah. So this, I draw it on the torus, right? It's drawn on the torus, and I cannot undraw it. It's correct, right, Frank? Yeah. You see? So you draw it here on the torus. On the torus, we could draw it on this donut, but we cannot undo it. Here we draw it on the sphere. We can move it around on the sphere, right? This object. Okay, so this would be an example of even in string theory for the vacuum, I would sum spheres, donuts with two handles, and so on. Okay? So let's think a little bit more if this picture of large N and string theories does make sense. For that, consider a four-point function. OP. OP, OP, OP. Okay? Now, look, one thing you can definitely draw is draw a disconnected graph, right? Where you just draw this graph times this graph. So you weak contract operators from operator 1 to 2, from operator 3 to 4. This you can do, just connect. I mean, there can be connections, more stuff, but it could be disconnected. Plus, you could draw things where you would use, it would be connected like this. Okay? Without holes. So let's not allow for holes. Okay? So here, I would have genus 0 first. Plus other stuff, where other stuff would be putting holes here, drawing graphs that I need to put holes and so on. Okay. Yeah. So what you will easily see is that this guy would be order 1, then this guy here is of order 1 over n squared. So indicating that what happens when you consider this is that the strings to leading order, they want to be free when n is large. They prefer to just move disconnected. But then there is an interaction, and this is an interaction between the strings. And this interaction is proportional to 1 over n squared, which is just the coupling of the string. There is some probability for them to join and to split. So any counting that you do in large N theories, where you think there is a string theory interpretation, comes out right with this interpretation that G string is 1 over n. Okay? So you draw a four-point function, you see that there is a disconnected term, and the connected term is suppressed with respect to disconnected by the coupling square, because you merge and you split. Okay? If you normalize this guy to 1, and then you consider the three-point function, well, we expect this to give a measure of the coupling, and indeed, this gives 1 over n in this normalization, which just measures the coupling between three strings. Okay. So the punchline here is the following. So let me summarize a little bit. So the idea is the following. So if we have a theory with some fields chi that can have indices AB, And chi, I'm using chi instead of phi to indicate chi could be a collection of things. For example, your theory could have five scalars. So then chi could be phi 1, phi 2, phi 3, 4, 5, phi 5. Or you could have some scalars and some fermions. Then this chi could be phi, phi prime, and psi, psi prime. Right? So you have some theory with some matter and some gluons also. This could be an A or an F. Okay, so it's some fields of your Lagrangian, but they are matrix valid. Then, if we construct a product of a bunch of them, chi times chi prime prime, ta 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 ta, and take a trace, this corresponds to a single string. And so you could imagine that if I have many types of fields I can put, there will be many orders I could choose here, which could correspond to many string states that I have here. Okay? So one theory that people understand very well is one theory called n equals 4 super Young Mills. Okay? Where, for example, this chi could be equal to, for example, there are in this theory 6 scalars. There are 4 gluons, 8 fermions. It's not important, the details, but chi can be a bunch of things. And in this case, this will describe a string. And the fact that you could choose here a complicated letter, it's a superstring. It will describe a superstring in some complicated space, which is called ADS5 times S5, which is an hyperbolic space and a sphere. So it's a 10-dimensional space that morally speaking, or not morally, correctly speaking, you can think as a product of an hyperboloid times a sphere. Okay? So string theory in this product of ADS, which is an hyperboloid and a sphere, the fact that you can have strings that are very complicated in many ways, it can be moving wildly in ADS, and it can be even more wildly in the sphere, for example, or vice versa. I should have this freedom here to put, say, many scalars or many gluons. And this ought to correspond to a string. For example, I can tell you that putting many scalars means considering a string that in the sphere is very wild. And putting many gluons is a string which in ADS is very wild. Okay, so there is a one-to-one map between, because of the quantum numbers of strings, what they are doing in the sphere or in hyperbolic space. Okay? And this is the most known example of ADS CFT, where you have a correspondence between a theory with large number of colors that turns out to be a conformal field theory, and a theory of ADS, because this space turns out to be hyperbolic space, which is called anti-de-Sitter space. And this example is one example where people could make precise this hand-waving stuff that I told you before. Questions? So I'm giving you the context. As you will see in 10 minutes, the problem that I will...
Why do we need n to be large if we can match Feynman diagrams and string diagrams order by order in one of n square and these?
If we don't have, if n is 3, it's hard to separate them. But if you separate them by hand, you don't need it, of course. N doesn't appear. Okay? So you see that the diagrams, once I say I draw them on the cylinder, they are what they are. N doesn't appear because they all come with the same power of N. So N is just factored out outside. Then I draw them on the torus, N is just whatever it is. It's just 1 over N squared sitting outside times the diagrams that I draw on the torus. So for each genus, N is not doing anything special, it's just sitting there. Like in string theory, we sum over strings of genus 0, then genus 1, genus 2. When we study strings of genus 2, the string coupling is just multiplying G string to the 4. It's not doing anything in the path integral. So from that point of view, even real world QCD with 3 gluons is a string theory. But it's a string theory where we need to sum all genus. We cannot truncate reasonably at any genus. Okay? Okay, good. So, right. Questions, more questions here. So I'm trying to follow a geodesic to be able to give you some context for what we are going to do, but as I said, the goal of what we are going to do, as you'll see, is rather sharp and precise, and you don't need to understand all this background, but I think it's fair to give you a little bit of an idea of why we would do what we would do. Okay. So this is understood. And then you can ask, what can you now compute in string theory, in ADS CFT, to start making this precise? Because now you have to start understanding understanding this dictionary to make sure it works and to clarify it. And understanding the dictionary is as important as proposing the duality, right? I mean, it's like you have two languages. What's important is the dictionary. I mean, otherwise, okay, just saying that two languages exist and are dual to each other is not very useful, right? I mean, unless you have a way to translate, okay, who cares? So here I'm also saying this theory is equal to this theory, but we need to give a dictionary to understand what we are talking about. So the first thing you could compute is, you could ask, what's the two-point function of two strings? So O with O, where O is a single string. Operator. In other words, this trace of a product of fields. Okay. So this problem, it's equal to three level plus one loop, where I draw five, right? Plus two loops plus dot, dot, dot. Plus 1 over n square times the same thing, plus 1 over n to the 4 times the same thing. Where, let me explain, what I'm saying here is that I have diagrams that I can draw on the cylinder, but which are just three level. Then I have diagrams that I can draw on the cylinder, but which contain some Feynman loop happening there. Right? Plus dot, dot, dot. And that would be all the first line. The first line is an infinite set of diagrams, three level, one loop, two loops, three loops, and so on. That's hard. Then you have the same thing on the torus, which is even harder. And then the same thing on genus 2, which is even harder, and so on. Okay? So this is the problem, the first problem that you would like to study. And this should correspond to considering a string propagating in anti de Sitter space, plus the string propagating and splitting into two, plus the string propagating but in the path splitting twice, and so on. Okay. So if we say that a string coupling is very small, we can focus on this term. So this is what matters when the number of colors goes to infinity, because these ones are suppressed. And then we are focusing on this first line, which is still very hard. You still amount to drawing all Feynman diagrams that you can draw on the cylinder and resumming them all to compute a function that depends on lambda. Okay? Notice that, sorry, that depends on the coupling, whatever coupling appears in your Lagrange. So the coupling, the idea of this coupling is that summing over all these diagrams, they come like with some coupling, let's call it lambda, this with, okay, this maybe no coupling, this lambda square, this lambda cube, no, this lambda square, and so on. Besides n, this will be some coupling parameters. The summation over all these diagrams weighted by lambda is the analog of doing the path integral over shapes of string, but with genus 0. And then summing over all diagrams with genus 1 is doing the path integral over all string surfaces, but with fixed genus 1. Okay? So there is a relation between lambda, these coupling parameters, and the coupling of the string, which is a string tension that governs how much the string can vibrate. If the string tension is very large, for example, the string just propagates classically, like when h bar goes to zero and we throw a ball and we see a parabola. Okay? Whereas when h bar is not very small, we have to sum over all possible trajectories. Okay? So in string theory, there are these two quantum parameters, one which measures the genus, how likely it is for things to split and join, split and join. That's n. And the other is the string tension, how quantum is the string in vibrating without changing its genus. So even if I say that n is infinity and a string goes from here to that corner without splitting, it still vibrates and joins, bubbles, until it goes from one point to the other. Okay? So this problem here, computing this in a quantum field theory at all loops and quantizing strings with genus zero at all string tension, if we could do it, it would be the first check of ADS-CFT, showing that the two agree. That the propagation of strings quantized exactly would be the same as summing all Feynman diagrams, infinitely many Feynman diagrams, and resumming them. Okay? So this problem, it's called the spectrum problem, was solved in 2009. This was the first example of people being able to compute something in a quantum field theory exactly. Okay, so this problem is done. Okay? So this is done. It was done in 2009. And you see it's the first set. So this problem is equivalent to considering the propagation, in other words, to considering the energy, because if we know the energy in a quantum system, we know its propagation, of single strings. The full quantum energy, it's the spectrum. It's all the energy levels of all possible string states in hyperbolic space, which translate into the statement of computing all energies of this quantum field theory with all quantum corrections taken into account. Okay? Any question? So let me tell you what else was done. What was done was compute when n goes to infinity to study three-point functions and four-point functions where by then I mean that these objects, this when n goes to infinity, which means that I draw no genus, I consider interaction of strings without splitting and joining. Okay. And recently, what was done was considering the scattering of strings where there are some interactions. Okay. So this was done a few weeks ago. And this was done last year, and this was done 3 years ago or 2 years ago. This is all very recent stuff, where people for the first time are understanding how to tame these objects and start studying string interactions. So the very first thing, people were trying to solve this problem for like 10 years or for a long time. So this took a long time. Then once it was understood, one started studying interactions of string. What's the three-point interaction? What's the four-point interaction? And so on. Okay? Now, I should say that here, what was never studied is to understand this string here, this incoming string, with this string plus 1 over n square times the two strings that could come in plus dot, dot, dot. No one understood how to properly take these effects into account and how to describe really this Hilbert space of strings and the fact that a string mixes with many strings. So far, everything was focused on considering external strings to be single strings and never worrying about their degeneracy and the fact that the Fock space of strings start mixing with each other. Okay? So this would be the goal of the project of the school. Okay? So let me tell you now technically, what's the basic idea and why can we jump this like 20, 30 years of research in ADS-CFT and solve a problem in a winter school? It's because it's technically well posed and it's not as hard as it might sound. So, okay. So the basic idea is the following. So, but is there any question here? So, extreme of one set.
So the basic idea is that in this theory, in string theory, there are two types of strings. There are two types of strings in string theory. A string could be like this, or it could be like this. It could be a point. So a string has some tension, it wants to close. So if you are not careful, it shrinks and it looks like a point. Okay? So for example, you could have a complicated solution that is in ADS. For example, some string moving in this hyperbolic space and also moving on the sphere. This would be a generic example of this case. Or there are other objects that are much simpler, which do the following. So they are just a point that goes around in circles in ADS. And in the sphere, it is just a point that orbits the equator of the sphere. So that's a string where x, the map from sigma and tau to target space, ends up being just a function of tau. Okay, where normally I have some sigma, and then tau is the movement from one snapshot to the next. But it doesn't depend on sigma. All points of the string are mapped to the same point. Just a point. Just a point-like string. So such strings that are points that move in the sphere and move in ADS, they correspond to very, as we said, one string corresponds to one operator. These correspond to operators where I just multiply the same chi many times. The same. So I take, say, one of the scalars in this theory, and I multiply that scalar many times instead of multiplying different types. And I can still choose which scalar. I have many scalars. But that's fine, because the sphere has many equators. So choosing different scalars would be rotating the string and saying around which equator it is rotating. Okay? So there are these nice operators that move. They could move around this equator or around other equators. Okay? And various equators would correspond to various choices of scalar that I take this scalar and raise it to the power p. I just multiply the same scalar p times. And having these various equators correspond to having various scalars that I could choose. And what's interesting is that for these operators, this state of a single straight is exact. So this state does not mix with states. I can say this state evolves under the Hamiltonian, it stays the same. It's an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian. And intuitively, you can think that this state is the state which has the highest angular momentum in the sphere. So there are no other states that it could mix with. So it's very efficient at rotating around the sphere. It's just, it shrinks to a point and rotates, and the other guys you could try to mix would have, for the same energy, would have less angular momentum. So this state, it saturates some bounds related to their charges, so they are very unique. And because they saturate these bounds, they don't mix with other stuff. Okay? So it's a little bit, perhaps the analogy would be a little bit like when you consider corrections to, say, self-energy of protons, electrons, and so on. They are complicated, right? You shift their mass and so on. But photons, for example, they don't acquire mass. There is some gauge symmetry that says they are massless and they continue to be massless. Okay? So photons would be good asymptotic states. They don't get the mass corrected and so on. But electrons are more dangerous guys. Electrons mix with other stuff and I have to correct their mass and so on. Similarly, these states, these point-like states, they are good. I can consider them as external states. And if I consider here one such string, here one such string, here one such string, then this is a good quantity. It makes sense. These are just point-like strings. I'm considering strings that are rotating in the various equators and then letting them scatter with each other and see what happens. Okay? So again, the process of scattering asymptotic point-like strings is well defined, because strings point-like, they continue to be point-like asymptotically. So they just come in, they scatter, and they go away, and I consider and I measure their probability for this to happen. Okay? But now you see what's the basic idea. The basic idea now is, let's do the following. Let's start with two strings that are point-like and bash them against each other, like at the LHC. And this will produce strings that are not point-like. Like you throw two hugely energetic strings at each other, right? You bash and boosh, huge explosion with strings, big strings and so on floating around. And then you grab one of those strings and now you scatter that string. So if you can, the idea is then, if we can control these strings where we scatter point-like, we should be able to collide two of them to produce one which we did not know how to control before. Okay? So the idea, and I'm... The idea then is, suppose I want to study, say, a scattering of four states which are not point-like. So this would be a string which is complicated. It's this plus a double string plus dot, dot, dot. And I don't know how to do it. So what I could do is I start by scattering two point-like strings with each other. Okay? And this I know. This I know. And I scatter two of them, and I produce a ton of things here. When two of these point-like strings produce, they produce a shower of everything. And I project into the guy I want, which has fixed energy. I don't need to know its precise form. I just need to look at the outcome of the experiment, see that I get a sum of stuff, and say each term in that sum will be one state in one term in my Hilbert space. Right? Like if I give you a partition function, sum of e to the minus beta h, you look at each term, and that's one energy level. Okay? So if we could study, instead of this four-point function, so we go from a four-point function, in this case, we could get this four-point function starting from an eight-point function of much simpler operators and colliding them pairwise and joining them pairwise. So we would start with a bunch, a correlation function in the gauge theory. It would be like this. I would have eight operators. And what I would say is, well, seen from far away, these two operators, they collide, and they give me some effective operator here. These two, they collide, and they give me some effective operator here. And same for this, and same for this. Okay? More precisely, in a CFT, there is such thing called the operator product expansion that tells me that when I have two operators, and I write like this, I can replace them by a sum over k, some coefficient ck, ok at x. She's just saying, I'm looking from very far away, and these two operators, they look like just one operator. It's like expansion, monopole, dipole, quadrupole in electrodynamics. When you see something from very far away, it looks like a point. Right? So the various terms that would appear here, the various operators, would correspond to the various string states. So these guys are very complicated. As I said, no one knows how to study this Hilbert space of strings. Each term here will be a complicated mixture of strings of any size. And I have no hopes of understanding how to describe it. At least right now, we don't know how to describe it in an efficient way. But I don't care. I just take two operators that I know, each of them corresponding to a point-like string. Each of them is just a simple operator. And I study the OP, and this OP, there will be some powers of n, right? So some powers of epsilon. So there will be one term, which is just dipole. I just remove epsilon, and I think it's just a point-like string still from far away. But then there is dipole, quadrupole, and so on. That will be an expansion in this epsilon parameter. So for small epsilon, maybe I see like one operator or two or three there, but not much. But if I want really super high precision, I need dipole, quadrupole, whatever is the name afterwards, and so on, and many, many terms to get the correct effective operator. Okay? And in this way, after I do it, I just get these effective operators, and I compute the four-point function between this effective operator. okay? So this would be a way of showing that of constructing any complicated object by bashing together very energetic point-like strings that as they scatter, they produce some more excited states. Okay? Any question?
What makes a string point-like? I don't quite understand this.
So there are many string solutions. So it's your choice. It's really like a piece of string. Imagine you have a piece of string that has some tension. So if you just let it go because it has some tension, it closes into a point. It will not close into a point if you spin it, say. Right? You spin it and centrifugal force, for example, opens up. So if you have a string that is spinning because of centripetal force, it's opening up. Then it's becoming, say, a rod, for example. Rotating, right? Or you could spin it in more directions and then it's not just a rod, it starts opening up in various directions. So you have all these choices of string. Right? Now, that looks continuous. I choose how much angular momentum I gave. It looks continuous. It looks like I have a continuous spectrum of strings. I can rotate epsilon more, epsilon square more. But in reality, we know it's not like this. Quantum mechanically, things get discretized. We cannot give things any angular momentum. They are discretized. So the spectrum of the string is the discretization of that naive continuous spectrum. The spectrum looks very smooth, very continuous. I can get more or less everything because I can rotate in all possible gazillion directions inside this 10-dimensional space. But then I quantize and I start seeing that the various angular momenta need to be quantized, and that's how I'm getting the quantum spectrum of the string. Now there are many such strings. These ones that are point-like are the simplest ones to describe. I just say it's a point and the point rotates around the equator. And you can go and check, yes, it solves the equations of motion of the string. So it's one good string solution. Not the only one, but it's one string solution. Okay? More questions? Yes?
From the OP expansion, can we project down?
But don't use words that I did not explain yet.
Okay. No, I
did not use words OP, so you cannot use words OP. They don't know what, do you know what OP is? Does someone know what OP is? An O, a P, and an E. I have to explain that maybe before.
So from point-like operators, can you project down to some certain operator with certain quantum numbers that you like?
Sometimes, yes. Well, that is a big degeneracy, yeah.
I mean, if not, then how is the correlation function different from just a 8-point correlation function of point-like operators? I mean, you drew a diagram first with four external legs. Then
yes.
You decompose each legs into 2-point like extra
yes.
legs.
Yeah.
So I think what we want to do is three string operators, but we don't know how to characterize those string states, so we decompose them into 2-point leg operators.
Yes.
But if we don't know how to project down the product of 2-point leg operators to a preferred string leg operators, then how do we say that this correlation function is equal to this 4-point correlation function of these string operators?
So, okay, let me explain so first of all, we know how to project. So, but technically in practice, there can be a huge degeneracy and the problem of projecting can be hard. But it is known because in the OPE, by looking at the OP terms, you read the quantum numbers that are flowing. Now, there might be many states with those quantum numbers, and therefore you might need to consider a big subset, a big collection of 8-point functions that all together you can use to solve the degeneracy. But that's if you want to be super, super general. We want to just solve a simple time model that I'm going to explain now. Okay? So, yeah. So, this is okay. So let me give you an example of the first thing we could try to do. The first thing we could try to do is study the four-point function right? And consider the simplest case is consider this guy to be a point-like string, this guy to be a point-like string, and by taking them together, I would get, and here it would be a point-like string, here a point-like string, and I would get the probability for here some complicated string that I would obtain by taking together these two guys. And I would have here some complicated string, okay, some O complicated. And I would have the decay of that string into two point-like strings. Okay. That's simpler than starting with 8-point functions and going to 4. I start with 4 and go to 3. Okay? So that would be the simplest case we could do. Okay? So let me explain technically an example of one such computation, what this amounts to do. So let's make things very explicit. And consider the following. Consider the correlation function of four operators that are of the form trace of phi square, trace of phi square, trace of phi square, trace of phi square. So these are four small strings. Each of them is just phi times phi, so just two units, a very small string. And I have four of them. And you see it's the same scalar, phi phi, phi phi, so they are all BPS strings. Okay? So each of them is a BPS string. Now, it's easy to see if I start doing this computation in a, okay. So this quantity, I would describe it like this. Okay? This is the picture that I associate to this guy. Now, how do I compute this in perturbation theory? I start drawing graphs where, for example, I draw this graph where each operator here, for example, operator 1 is connected to operator 2, which is connected to operator 4, which is connected to operator 3. Each one is a phi square. Remember, so it has two phis getting out. Okay? This diagram here, for example, would give me a propagator between 1 and 2, a propagator between 2 and 4, a propagator between 3 and 4, and a propagator between 1 and 3, where each of these propagators in this theory, which has no scale, is 1 over the distance between the two points square. Because scalars have dimension 1, and this theory has no other scale, so that's the only thing I could write. Okay? This is in a CFT. And there are other diagrams I could write, which would correspond to permuting these points. 1, 3, and then there would be another diagram I could do, where it would be 1, 4, 3, 4. Okay. So there are basically a bunch of terms plus d, 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 plus d, 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 d. And this would be what I would write, just three level, without any vertex, without any interaction. And then you start doing Feynman diagrams, which means you start adding particles. For example, a gluon that could be exchanged between these legs and these legs. Okay. And this would start correcting, this diagram here would be corrected by some function that would start depending on the coupling. And that could depend on the positions of the various points, xi. So this function m would be 1 plus da da da, where this da da dot are the various loop corrections when you start doing beyond tree level. Okay. And now, how is this object m computed from the picture if we think of this in a string theory? The way we compute it right now is by thinking that you cut the string in some way like this. You cut the string open like this, then you cut it like this, then you cut it like this, you cut it like this, you cut it like this, and you cut it like this. So after you cut the string in this way, you see that you get a bunch of faces, each of them, this is one face here, and if you count the edges of this face, let's count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So it's an hexagon. So what happens is that this four-point function becomes a product of four hexagons. Where by product of four hexagons, we just think that let me decompose the string path integral into I do this part of the path integral, then this part, and I glue together the various the path integral of the string. But what does it mean to glue? How do you glue things in physics? You sum over a complete base of states. That's how you say propagate things. Gluing means summing over everything that's possible. So when I say that I glue, I mean that here I insert at this edge where I'm gluing the identity, which is the sum over a complete base of states of my string that is stretching between these two points. So at the end of the day, what we end up is a product of hexagons, where at edges of hexagons, I put some states, n, and I glue them with another hexagon, n, and so on, and I have many sums over this complete base of states, n, n prime prime, etc. And that's the form. When I say people solved it, I mean they solved it up to the detail that the result is a massive multi-sum and so on in general. So it's a complicated object to deal with, but that's the form that we are given. Okay? For example, let me be slightly explicit. One thing you can do is when you insert the identity here, you can insert the first, the simplest state you can put, which is one excitation of your string. Really think of your string as a cello string and put one phonon of the string, one music tone, one mode of the string excited. Okay? So you consider one excitation here. So this sum over n becomes vacuum plus one excitation on the string, plus two excitations, and so on. You see that pictorically, it looks like when you cut this correlation function, like there is one excitation going from one side to the other. So it's natural to expect that this first term should be what matters to compute, for example, the first quantum correction at weak coupling, and that's indeed what happens. So let me tell you what's the contribution if I put just a single particle. Just so you see some explicit formulas. So it's something like this. So in that case, the contribution to this function m, when I put just a single particle gluing these two hexagons, is equal to the following. So it was understood that in this case, it's proportional to the following. And I can give you precise expressions later. There are actually a that runs from 1 to infinity, which are the modes that you could excite of the string. It turns out that there are many modes you could excite of this string. They form what's called bound states. You can think that they're really ripples of the string that form, that can form any possible bound state. So these are the types of particle you can put on the string. So there is a mode of strength 1, mode of strength 2, mode of strength 3, and so on. And this can be with any momentum. So this is the momentum of this excitation along the string. With which velocity does it move on this edge of the string? Okay. Then, what appears here is something like z to the a over 2 minus z to the minus a over 2. I'll tell you what z is in a minute, times z z bar to the IU. So here we see the momentum of the particle and something like lambda squared, the coupling square, over u squared plus a squared over 2. Okay? What is, let me explain this notation. Z is a combination of the position of the four external points. It's something like x1 minus x2 times x3 minus x4 divided by x1 minus x3, x2 minus x4. And it's called a conformal cross ratio. It's a combination that is invariant under translation of all the points, rescaling of all the points. It's invariant under what's called all conformal transformations. So when I have points in a conformal field theory, because the theory has no scale, I can make dilations, I can translate them, and functions should be invariant under those transformations. And therefore, instead of being a function of the various position, it's only a function of these things which are called the cross ratios. So that's good. So that's a conformal invariant way of saying point 1 and 2 are close to each other when this cross ratio is small. But that's the only thing that's meaningful. Saying that 1 and 2 are close doesn't mean anything if there is no scale. I can always rescale and make it big. So being small means it's small compared to the other distances. Okay? So that's what's called the cross ratio. Okay? So you can think of this as saying that I put a particle here. There was some probability for creating this particle and some probability for annihilating it. This lambda square, you can think that this probability of creating and then probability of annihilating. This u square plus a square over 2 would be, which is actually over 4, and it's actually square, would be measuring the probability. It's also the measure for how likely is it to create such particle which has momentum u on this line. And then this exponential of IU times logarithm of ZZ bar is a Boltzmann wave that tells me for how long do they have to propagate. And these modes, they have angular momentum, and you can see that these values here are related to the angular momentum as it propagates from one side to the other. So I don't want you to understand how this formula comes about and where it comes about. I just want to tell you that people understood right now from string theory inspired ideas of thinking of these objects as two-dimensional surfaces, how to insert excitations at various edges where you cut and write integral expressions like that that describe, if you sum over all possibilities, that should describe the objects. Okay? So it's a long story to tell you where this expression comes from. I'm just telling you the physical meaning. These are Boltzmann weights, and this is probability of creating and annihilating this excitation. Now, this integral is super trivial to compute. There is a residue at IA over 2, you compute the residue, and then you do the sum in Mathematica over A. And it's fine, it's really very, very easy. And you compute, and it will give you some function, which is 1 over Z times polylog of Z minus log Z log 1 minus Z, something like that. It's something simple. Okay? You compute, and you get something. And now, it turns out, here I wrote z bar, I won't set z bar to 1, I don't want to add z bar. Simplify the story. So it's something like this. You get some function like this. And this function is actually exactly what you get if you consider a gluon exchange between two lines at position like this. So this is a totally different computation. This is, you take four-dimensional space-time, you integrate over gluons, you do this Feynman-Dah graph, and you get this function, which is called the conformal box function, which people that know about Feynman diagrams knew for a long time. The other this computation is totally different. It's, I have a one-dimensional string, I insert an excitation, I compute this integral, and you get exactly the same result. So it's an example on how these two-dimensional ideas can sometimes match the four-dimensional intuition. Okay? But then what do I do here? I take this function here and I write it as a sum of z to the n, where z is this parameter when 1 and 2 are going close to each other. So if they go close to each other, it's exactly the limit I said, where 1 and 2, I see them as being from far away. And the coefficients I interpret as c squared where this Cn is exactly the probability of getting some complicated string n going into these point-like strings. And now you take this function that you compute, you Taylor expand it in Z, and each coefficient is representing one probability for this process. Okay? So I have to be more precise. If I say that this function is m of z, then what appears here is something like m of z. Here it would be m of z over z minus 1. And here it would be m of 1 minus z. So you take these three functions, you compute them, you get some polylogs and logs. You Taylor expand. Taylor expanding means you take two operators, make them close, and see from far away. You get a Taylor expansion. That Taylor expansion, the various terms, are what you get by replacing these two operators by one operator. So each one represents a contribution of one such operator. Okay? Now, in practice, it's more than one because there is degeneracy. So it's some weighted sum. That's what Nafis was saying. But if ignoring degeneracy, each term in the expansion is one operator. Okay, is it clear? Is the procedure clear? So let me summarize again. So we start with m, which is equal to some integral, and this integral comes from doing some string gluing. So I have some string gluing, and I have m, which is equal to some integral. Then we compute the integral, and we get m equal to a bunch of logs and polylogs. Then we Taylor expand, and we get m equal to a sum of cn z to the n, where z is, morally speaking, the distance between two operators. Okay? We have rather 1, 2, 3, so we have a sum of 3 m's. Sum of 3 m's, sum of 3 m's. And then we obtain what we want. This now is the three-point function between two point-like strings and one string which is not point-like, and this guy contains all the correct Hilbert space. A string plus two strings plus tac, tac, tac. Each term n. Okay? So technically speaking, the problem we would solve is the following. So this is not totally satisfactory because we have a formalism that said if the external operators are these point-like strings, we know how to cut the strings and write it as a sum over gluing over a bunch of integrals that represent this gluing, right? Then you compute, you see what you get. And then you Taylor expand and you get the result. But you did not really learn how to deal with these excited states. You got the result, that's correct. You Taylor expanded and now you have the result. C1, C2, C3, C4 are various processes that we wanted to know, so that's great. But we did not learn how to deal with this mixing problem because we computed the integral and then expanded. How would we learn? If we managed to go directly here, right? This is what we would call learning. We would have a way of gluing, and we would understand before computing, before evaluating the integrals, before doing these trivial integrals, how do we take the limit when z goes to zero? How do we take the short distance limit? And if we would jump from here to here without first computing these residues and so on, and then Taylor expanding, if we learn how to go directly from expansions of this type to what the OP is, this is what we would call learning. Because we would understand directly at the level of the formalism, what does it mean to start fusing the various operators? What will the formalism become? Okay? So let me give you an example. Here, do you need to compute this integral to Taylor expand at small z? No, you can look here and say, well, z goes to zero. This is going to become e to the I u times log z. It's going to diverge. And this, as a pole, so I could see which pole is more important when I sum and see right away, oh, I only care about one pole. So projecting to z equals zero probably means truncating to the first mode of the string. And I truncate right away and I'm done. You see? without, I don't need to first compute these complicated polylogs. And if I just care about extracting residues, I can find out where they come from and stop earlier and learn what the formalism is telling me. So that's very easy. So when z goes to zero, this is very easy. Here, when z goes to zero, this argument also goes to zero. So it's also the same story. Z goes to zero, z over z over minus one also goes to zero. It's the same argument. And then you have this. When z goes to zero, this argument goes to one. When this argument goes to one, it's more subtle. Because when this argument goes to one, it's not really, nothing seems to be problematic here, but it's actually about this sum no longer converging. And we have to understand what's happening as this sum is stopping to converge. Of course, if we just compute, we get something, and then we Taylor expand in mathematics, we just do series, it's fine, that we can do. But to learn means you take the formalism, you write what the expressions are, and you understand how to take this z to zero limit, this pinching limit before. And doing it, we learn directly, this is the formalism for studying excited string states. Okay? So technically, what we will do is take examples where I can give you integrals and sums which correspond to the gluing. I can show you what the result is, and we can first Taylor expand to series in Mathematica. And then we want to understand directly how to reproduce these coefficients starting from the expressions which represent this string gluing. Okay? And the first thing we would start is by starting with a four-point function and going to three-point function. Then we would start with five-point function and go to four-point function by taking two of them, four-point function, of three-point like and one interesting. Here, we would get two-point like and one interesting. And then we would start from four-point function in the torus with one hole to get three-point function with one hole, which means that we get two-point like and we get one string, where now the mixing with two strings is important because we are working to order 1 over n squared, so we can no longer neglect the mixing with multi-strings. So this would be warm-up. We know the result, we know the result. And because it's leading order, it's planar, we don't care about mixing. We don't care that this guy mixes and this guy mixes, because we are studying leading order in N, leading order in the string coupling. Okay? And this, if we then learn how to do this, technically this is not more complicated. And here we would learn how to tame this string Gilbert space and how to get states, including their mixing correction. And this is a problem that was not solved before. So this would be, we would be solving this problem in string field theory of understanding how to describe excited strings by bashing together point-like strings, by understanding how to go directly from gluing of string integrals and sums to the final result before computing things explicitly. Of course, I must say that here when I said we compute things explicitly, it's because I was working in some limiting case, because in general we cannot compute things explicitly. It's not like I can write what the result is. When I say it's solved, it's not like it's some simple function. It's not computable. It's given by many integrals and sums and so on. I can plot it, but I cannot write it down as some polylogarithms or something simple like that. Okay? Yeah. So the project is roughly technically, so conceptually, as you see, it's a huge story, but technically it is computing a Taylor expansion directly of some sums and integrals rather than going through the final result first. So you, as you see, so it looks very, very vague in the beginning, but it's rather sharp. I'll give you these formulas and say, how do you compute Taylor expansion at small z of this without cheating and looking at the final result? So really honestly starting from the integral and getting the coefficients direct. So it's, the first step is not that complicated. Okay, thank you. Questions? It's a huge subject. I mean, I can imagine that you are probably a bit lost, but you see, it took 1 hour and a half, and if I would explain slower, it would take 5 hours. It's it's just too big, but yeah, Frank will be helping out. Yeah, he did not write the expression for M of Z, but can you actually add to the file, Frank, just the sum for M of Z so that it looks a bit more explicit, so that people have an idea. Unless you cite the formula in Shota's paper, but yeah. No questions? Everyone is afraid of asking? Okay.